Hi guys, my name is Lauren Curtis. I've been on social media since 2011, and since then I've grown a following of over 7 million people across my platforms. And I have learned a lot along the way. The Mental Makeover podcast shares real, very honest advice on all things happiness, body image, self-love, relationships, spirituality, and reaching your goals. Hey guys, hope you're all doing fabulously. Today is an Ask Lauren episode, which means that many of you send me a DM on Instagram. My handle is @LauzCurtis, if you don't already know that. And basically ask me for advice on anything that you may be struggling with. So I've got lots of different questions covering lots of different areas. Let's get straight into it. The first question asks, if you as an adult, knowing all that you do now, had a chance to guide your adolescent self through youth, would you? If so, what would you primarily say or do? Just curious. Now, this is a good one. I mean, on one hand, I'm like, ooh, let's not interfere with the past because that's led me to exactly where I am now and I'm very happy with that place. But ooh, that would be nice because I was very insecure back then, mainly in high school. I think high school basically is just a big slap in the face for many people. It's not like, I mean, I've talked to some people who had amazing high school experiences, and I will admit, a little bit jealous. I don't think it was that fabulous. In fact, I couldn't wait to graduate. I went to a private all girls school, and I just don't think that is a great environment to go through puberty in. It was just, I don't know. I felt like if you already had insecurities or self-image issues or body issues or anything like that, private or girls' school is just going to make those so much worse. And yeah, I mean, I could have had my high school experience could have been a lot worse. It got worse towards the end. But I think if I did have the opportunity, even just to pop in on my younger self every now and then, just like when I notice myself kind of getting off track or being extra insecure about something, I just pop in and say, first of all, high school means nothing in the scheme of things. Like the moment you leave high school, none of it matters. Who you're friends with, how popular you were, how many people you knew, how many people liked you, or how many boyfriends you had, all that stupid stuff that we think is so important in the moment, none of it matters. Literally the moment you leave high school. Second to that, I just say you are worth more than you think you're worth. You do not have to second guess yourself or doubt yourself or compare yourself to the people around you, because in hindsight, you will learn that you would not like to be like any of them. I mean, no, some of the girls that I was friends with were lovely and awesome people, but the vast majority weren't. And I found myself constantly comparing myself to those people. Like, why would I want to... I guess because at that time they were like popular and pretty and all the boys liked them, and I didn't really get much attention from boys because I didn't wear makeup or dress nicely, or I was just too shy anyway. Plus, I didn't really care, to be honest. So I kind of just tell myself, like, none of this matters. You're great. You have so much to look forward to in the future. You do not need to measure your self-worth against the people around you because, yeah, I'm not going to go into that, but some of the people that you're friends with are lovely. Some of the people you're friends with suck. Maybe stay closer friends with people that are lovely and care less about what the people that suck have to say about you. That's pretty much what I'd say in a nutshell. And I still deal with those issues now, self-worth and self-doubt and that kind of thing. I think I always will. It's one of those things. But at least now I can look back with the gift of hindsight and realize and perspective and realize that so little of it really matters in the scheme of things. And this applies to all parts of life. I don't know what it is about the way we see ourselves or the standards we set for ourselves, but they seem to be impossibly high. Like, we're never going to reach them. We're never going to be good enough. We're never going to be confident enough or pretty enough or this or that. Or that, or that, or that, because we just keep setting the bar higher. It's like we do something that we didn't think we were able to do. We're proud of ourselves, and the bar is like 10 meters higher now. And it's like you're constantly setting the bar higher and never really reaching it because it's not actually possible unless you want to drive yourself mental. So for me, just to summarize all of that, it would be a case of me popping in every now and then, and this is me to this day also having to like catch myself, popping in every now and then and saying, Lauren, you're great. Stop second guessing that. You have nothing, no tangible evidence that you're not great. So stop thinking that you're not great because you are. You're a good person. You have so much to offer, and stop letting that little voice inside your head tell you otherwise. Because the moment you let that voice in, the moment your light is diminished and you're not able to reach your full potential, which is great. Greater than you could possibly imagine. And that applies for all of you guys that are listening to this, because I know we're all guilty of it. You are great. Full stop. End of story. Stop second guessing yourself. This is an interesting question. Did plastic surgery help your confidence? Unsure if breast implants will help or hinder that for me. Well, that is a good question because, I mean, it's hard to say because I don't know what my confidence would be like right now without them. I mean, I wasn't overly insecure about them in the first place, which I know many people might not believe because why else would I get surgery to make them bigger? But yeah, I was just doing it because I thought it would make me more confident. Not that I wasn't, yeah, it definitely wasn't a huge insecurity of mine. I think it definitely bothered me enough, obviously, to want to get them done because I remember I gained, I think like 5 kilos, which back then on my frame was quite a lot because I had one of those teenage metabolisms, which is like you can eat 10 pizzas and like lose weight. But I had about, I don't know, maybe a full C cup. And then I lost that weight when I went off the pill, which is the reason that I caused, which is, sorry, the cause of the weight, and lost that 5 kilos pretty much instantly. And I also lost weight off my boobs. And I feel like I lost more than I needed to, as in, yeah, like the weight went from my boobs and other places, but mainly from my boobs. So then I went to like a very, very, very small B, and that was my main issue, is that I got used to the like fullness of having boobs, and then they were gone, and I was like, hello, where did you go? And that's why, yeah, that's what I guess prompted me to get them in the first place. In hindsight, so back then, I got the biggest size that I could for my frame. I got a narrow back, so the actual pocket was like, I had limited space for the implant to go into. So I got the biggest for my frame, which ended up making me like a, I don't know, maybe a double D at the time. And since getting older and gaining a few kilos here and there, that's probably gone to like a triple D, maybe an E on a great day. Not sarcasm, everyone. So yeah, in hindsight, I would very much like them to be smaller, but that's also because, and I know this is so ironic, everything I'm saying right now is like contradicting itself, but I do not like having attention drawn to my boobs, which is what implants do, unfortunately. And I never show my cleavage anyway, because again, I hate attention on my body. I am very conservative like that. I don't know why, it's always have been. So I always wear clothes that cover them up anyway. I think I would like them to be like a large C or a small D, just enough that they're full, but not so much that they're big, because it's almost had like a negative impact on my self-confidence now. Back in the day, it was great, whatever, you know, you're younger, that kind of thing is appealing to you, I guess. But I'm 26 now. So what, that was like 7 years ago. And I find myself asking Reese, like, oh, do my boobs look big in this? It used to be, does my belly look big in this? Now it's, do my boobs look big in this? And not wearing tops that accentuate them. So I have the opposite issue now. I feel like I'd be more confident if they were smaller. So it's a really personal question, and I don't think there's a right or wrong answer or one that applies to everyone. But in my personal experience, at one point in my life, they increased my confidence. Now, they don't really like hinder my confidence, but I think I'd prefer it. I'd probably feel more confident if they were a little bit smaller. I don't think I'd want them taking that completely, just smaller. So the answer to that question is yes and no, depending on when you asked me. And I'll take that question a little bit further, actually, and apply this to non-surgical procedures that I've had. I got veneers. Filler in your lips or other parts of your face to reduce wrinkles and things like that. I can't really speak on that because I haven't really had much experience with that. But in terms of like lips, that's been the same thing. Sometimes I'm like, ooh, luscious lips. And then other times I'm like, oh no, what was I thinking? And to the point where I used to get filler in my, lip injections in my bottom lip. And that's naturally bigger. And I noticed that I was getting it filled, out of my request to have it filled. And I started being aware of my smile. And when I smiled, my teeth already pushed my bottom lip out. So it was making my bottom lip look really weird and overly big. And that was therefore decreasing my confidence. So it's like, just because you're getting these things done doesn't mean you're actually going to like how it makes you look. In some cases, it can actually cause a problem where there wasn't one before, or create a new problem rather than solving the existing problem. And then sometimes it's actually, I've felt like my lips look awesome and I haven't had them filled for God knows how long. Now I just, I actually went into my appointment, a couple of weeks ago, thinking I was going to get some top up in my lip. And when I was driving, I was like, I don't actually think I want this anymore. And I told my lady who does my injections. Wow, that sounds terrible. The lady who does, okay, there's no way I'm making that sound pretty. Anyway, whatever. And I said, I don't want them done. And she's like, thank you. Like, she was stoked because she is very, very, very conservative. And that's why I love going to her, because she will talk you out of getting things done rather than talking you into them. And I just said to her, I just prefer to use lip liner now because I have control over it. And I think it's getting older. I just am more content with things the way that they naturally are. And yeah. So yeah, that's a very long way of answering a simple question. On to the next one. Next question. Do you ever struggle with anxiety in your relationship? It's something I've developed very recently and it's not very nice. My partner is amazing and supportive and I have no reason to be anxious that he will leave, cheat, whatever scenario my brain comes up with that day. But I find it really easy to fall down a rabbit hole of anxious thoughts and scenarios. Have you ever dealt with this? If so, do you have any tips? Now that's a good question, because so recently I've been together for, I think it's like 4 years now. And when we first started dating the first year, granted, I had never had like a proper relationship before. So it was all new to me. And Reese had a bad experience before me. So he was also in a kind of similar mindset, even though he had had relationship experience. And we had a lot of arguments over jealousy, and from both ends. I would make up scenarios in my head and he would make up scenarios in his head, and we felt super justified in those emotions, and an argument would evolve out of stupid stuff. And what it came down to is insecurity. We were both very insecure. He had his own reasons, which were very, very justified, and I had just dealt with that my whole entire life, just being an insecure person, not thinking that me as I am was good enough. And so I'd assume that, it's not only insecurity, it's also fear of being vulnerable, which is something that I hadn't really experienced before. It's like you find this awesome person and they're exactly what you wanted, and then this doubt starts creeping in because you're thinking, this person's awesome and I don't think I'm awesome, so I don't know if someone better comes along, would they just instantly want to leave me and go to them? Or do they think someone else is prettier than me because I'm not pretty enough? Or do they think someone's funnier than me because I'm not funny enough? And it always just comes down to insecurity. And it's a different story if someone actually cheated on you. Like, that's a whole other ballgame. That's not what we're talking about, obviously. But if they've given you no reason to feel the way you feel, but you're still feeling like that and you're feeling very strongly about it, then it's usually just from insecurity. And I think with dating someone for years and years, I don't know how long you've been with your partner for, but with Reese and I, it's been 4 years, and those same issues that we had in the first year just do not happen anymore. And the reason is because we know each other so well, and we've both been working on our self-confidence and self-esteem, and we're so much more secure in the relationship and established that that insecurity just isn't there. And of course, you're always going to have moments where you feel more insecure, or I don't know, whatever, the vulnerability and all that fun stuff kicks in. But as a whole, it's just, that is not something we argue about anymore. And what it comes down to is knowing your value, realizing that if they cheated on you, that's their loss and they have to deal with that, and that it's not a reflection of you or what you offer or how good a person you are or how good a partner you were. It's just a reflection of them, and that's pretty much it. It's their loss. If I cheated on Reese, that's my loss. If he cheated on me, that's his loss. And that's all it comes down to. So if he wants to make that decision, go right ahead. If I want to make that decision, I'll go right ahead. But at the end of the day, it's our loss. My loss or his loss. It's both a loss. You can't spend, or you shouldn't spend, your whole relationship in fear or in anticipation of someone doing something bad to you, because that's not fair on the other person. And if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. Your fear is not going to change anything. It's not going to stop them from doing it. If they're going to do it, they're going to do it. So you may as well just stop stressing about it and trust them. If they've given you every reason to trust them, keep trusting them. I just finished the book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Bleep, and it was great. In, I don't know, a certain part of the book, he was talking about people that suffered from OCD, and one girl in particular was terrified that if she didn't do this particular sequence of things, that her entire family would be like horribly killed. Or another guy who had a fear of germs and was convinced that if he got in contact with germs, you know, something terrible would happen, that kind of thing. And through speaking with a psychologist, they were able to significantly improve their OCD tendencies simply by the psychologist saying that even if they do their sequences or they avoid germs, there's a pretty realistic chance that that still might happen anyway. Their family might die anyway, and it's horrible and morbid, but it's the truth. Even if he avoids all the germs in the world, there still could be that one that slips through the cracks and he could still get sick. Even if he does all of his routines, even if she does her sequence, there's still a chance that her family might die, even if she does all that. So she doesn't actually have control over anything. And even though she feels like she does with her, you know, OCD tendencies, realistically she doesn't. And it's the same thing with being jealous or insecure or worrying or being anxious about, you know, your partner doing something wrong. It's like you can worry every single second of the day. You can think about it every moment. You can put everything in place. You can try and control it as much as you possibly can. But at the end of the day, if they want to do it, they're going to do it. And that is their loss. And that is all it comes down to. Is it going to hurt if they do it? Hell yes. But wouldn't you rather know that they are capable of doing that, and that is the kind of person that they are? But the chances of that happening are so slim. So I hope that answers your question. It's basically for us a mixture of time and the security that comes with time and knowing someone better and having stronger foundations, and also just realizing that stressing is not going to change anything. It's not going to, like, you can't control that situation. If that person is going to do that, they're going to do that. And it sounds like that person that you're with isn't going to do that because they've given you no reason to think that they would. So just let it go. Like, you can't control that situation, and you're going to drive a big wedge between you if you keep on letting those thoughts come to the surface. And at the end of the day, they're with you in the first place, which means that you obviously have a lot to offer. And if they didn't think that was the case, they wouldn't be with you. But they're continuously spending their lives with you, so obviously you're pretty damn cool and amazing, and that's what you should be reminding yourself of every single day. Next question. I want to get motivated to start going to the gym. I'm the biggest I've ever been and I want to get healthy and back to a more balanced diet and life. How do I get motivated / started on this journey? It seems like such a big journey. I'm scared of taking the first steps. Yes, good question. First of all, good on you for wanting to make a change if that's what you feel like you need. And I think motivation is probably not what you're looking for because motivation is always going to come and go. If I'm being perfectly honest, I am never really motivated to go to the gym. The main reason I go is because I have a personal trainer, and that's the main reason why I have a personal trainer, because it keeps me accountable, because I'm not the kind of person that wakes up in the morning and is like, hell yeah, let's go to the gym, let's work out. Reese is, he lives and breathes for it. So is my personal trainer. She loves the gym. And that process for her is really, really amazing. But for me, it's not. I love the result. I love spending time with my personal trainer. I love it while I'm there, but I don't have the motivation to get up and go. And I'm not saying get a personal trainer because it's very expensive. Unless you have the means to do it, then go for it. But if you don't, that's not really the answer. It's not really like a sustainable answer. For me, I think it's just the bigger picture. It's even just starting small. I was so terrified to go to the gym the first time I went. I've talked about this before in my videos, but it was really like a sore spot for me. I had all these built up emotions and preconceived ideas about what it was going to be like and assumptions. And it was nothing like that, of course, but it didn't make it any less scary. And I think for me, I had to start small. If it means for you, maybe it's just going for a walk every day. Maybe the gym for a lot of people is really, really scary, and I totally understand that. So for you, it might just be going for a stroll around the block. 5 minutes, that's all it takes. And I guarantee you, you putting on your gym clothes and getting out there and starting, like setting a really, really small goal makes it so much easier to convince yourself that it's worth doing, because it's easy, and that's what your brain wants. It wants easy. So if you're like saying to yourself, oh, I'm going to go to the gym 3 days a week, I'm going to spend an hour, I'm going to do all these exercises, that's pretty intimidating. And your brain's probably like, oh, no thanks, I'm going to stay in bed. So if you can set smaller goals and then gradually work your way up, I can guarantee you, you'll walk out the door, you'll have this 5 minute goal, and you're already up, you're already out. So then you'll think, okay, I can do maybe 10 minutes and then 15, 20, 25 minutes. I don't know. Maybe one day you'll do an hour, the next day you'll do 5 minutes, and at least you're out of the house. At least you did something. That feeling for me is the most rewarding part of it. It's not like the endorphins or whatever. It's like the fact that I did it and I didn't want to do it. That's like the satisfaction for me. Set small goals and you'll be empowered to take bigger ones. The issue that most of us have is setting goals that are too big, and you might reach them a couple of times, but it's not sustainable because it's too much of a shock from your normal life and your habits and your routine. You need to try and like slowly creep yourself into a new routine. It's not like quitting cold turkey. You're just dipping your toes in and then dipping a foot in and then a shin and then a leg and then anyway, same thing with diet. I have tried to eat really healthy. Reese and I have like cut out sugar and all that silly stuff, but at the end of the day, it's just not sustainable. And I'm sick of feeling like I've got to do all or nothing when you don't. Just making small changes every day is enough to make a difference. It's as simple as if you eat badly now, cutting out, I don't know what you eat, so I can't really make suggestions, but cutting out, soft drink, like sugary drinks, whether it be juice or, like fizzy drinks, Coke, whatever, or it's cutting out one bar of chocolate a week, or it's having vegetables for dinner once a week. It's something like that. It's just a small change that you can work your way up to. Bigger changes if you feel like empowered to or like you're ready to. But I've just found this really sweet spot, which is eating healthily, 70% of the time, maybe 70% I'd say, and then eating crap the remaining 30%, and it's great. To me, that's balance. I can sustain that. So that's probably my number one thing for you, is set small goals, because that way you'll actually feel satisfied and empowered and proud of yourself when you achieve them. And that feeling is what carries you on to the next goal and raising the bar a little bit higher. Stop thinking that you've got to go to the gym every single day and cut out all the bad food. It's not, you might do it for a week or 2 weeks or a month, but it's not going to last. I promise you that. Start small. Sub out a few bad meals a week. Start replacing them with good meals. Make little small changes. It's all well and good to think you can eat green juices for the rest of your life and not consume sugar and work out every day, but let's be real, I don't want to live like that. Even if I was ripped and amazing and toned and whatever, I can't sustain that, so it's not a way I want to live my life. I hope that answers your question. I tend to ramble. Someone asks, my question is, how do you manage to be happy all the time? I know you probably have your ups and downs, but how do you do it? Love your energy, by the way. Thank you. Yeah, I definitely am not happy all the time. I mean, I think you guys only see me when I am happy, because it would be a bit of a mood killer to watch someone who was angry or sad or something making YouTube videos or podcast episodes. So you only really see me when I'm like in a good mood. So maybe that's why you think I am that way. But I mean, generally, I do have a really positive outlook on life. Reese actually said that to me like a couple of weeks ago. He said, like, I love that about you, that you're always looking at the positive in the situation. You're always like optimistic. Like, he actually said, how are you always like that? And I think a lot of it comes down to perspective and trusting that I'm always on the right path in my life, and trusting that every experience I have in my life has a purpose. And even if it's something bad or something that I wish didn't happen, there is always something to be learnt from that. And more often than not, you need to learn those lessons if you want to get to the place that you want to get to in your life. If you want to achieve those big goals, or if you want to grow as a person or become happier, like, you need to learn not only from the good experiences, because I mean, obviously it's really easy to take positive lessons out of positive experiences, but it's a lot harder to take something positive out of something negative. So for me, it was a case of not feeling like I was a victim and that life just happened to me, and if I got unlucky, then I got unlucky. It's like, no, everything that happens in my life is leading up to something, or is teaching me something, or is making me stronger, or is just, it has meaning, and nothing is wasted unless you waste it, unless you don't take anything out of it, or you surrender to life. And I said it before, the whole quote that I'm sure you've heard before, but life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you. And I think having that mindset has been key in my positive outlook on life and my optimism, because, I mean, and it's not to say that, you know, I don't have bad days or crappy things happen and I'm just like, oh, that's totally cool, can't wait to take the positive out of this. Of course, that's not the case, but I think I just take life with a bit of a grain of salt now, because I understand that everything has a purpose. And when you have that mindset, it's very empowering and liberating, and it's just a lot more effortless, because it's like you're relinquishing the control that you think that you have on your life, because you don't have control over your life. You have control over the decisions you make and the thoughts you think, but you don't have control over how those decisions manifest in the real world and how, you know, everything falls into place and the outcome or the result of those decisions or those actions or those thoughts. Like, it's just when you relinquish that control and just surrender to the fact that you're always on the right path, you know, you're always making the right decisions, everything is happening to you to teach you something and to grow and to benefit from it somehow, someday, somewhere. It's just a lot easier to, like, go through life. It's just, I think that's what people that believe in God take out of the whole God has a plan thing. Like, it's just going with the flow of life, which sounds very corny, but it's true. I'm happy because I have perspective, and I know that when bad things happen, it'll be okay. When good things happen, that's exciting. I look forward to that. And at the end of the day, that's all I can really hope for in my life. It's just realizing that nothing really matters as much as we think it matters. And When you actually look around and see how much you have to be grateful for, it's really easy to regain like the correct kind of perspective and shift your focus away from things that were troubling you. Because at the end of the day, if you've got a roof over your head and clothes on your back and food in your belly, like, you're doing a lot better than most people, and that's something to be grateful for. Just those three basic necessities. I mean, if you don't have anything other than that, you still have that. And I know it's a very like world peace answer, but it's true. Gratitude to remind myself of everything that I have, and it also is quite humbling as well, because it just makes you realize that all the little small things that we worry about are nothing in the scheme of things. And just going with the flow. That's pretty much it. Question: can you talk about cheating and how to move on from it? Well, I have to say that if someone cheated on me, I would never speak to them again. No, thank you. No, 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 no. And my like politically correct brain is trying to say to me right now, oh, but there could be a different situation that applies here, and maybe it's not worth putting like a blanket statement on this, but no, 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 no. If Reese ever cheated on me, yuck. Ew, I'd be so angry and upset and hurt, and he knows how much that would destroy me. I think cheating on someone is the lowest form of anything. Like, if you don't have the guts to break up with someone before you want to be with someone else, like, ew. Nah, I am just way too proud. And I'm not saying that you're not proud. I'm just saying that, like, I am so stubborn and assertive. And I'm not saying you're not assertive, but just describing myself, like, to let someone back into my life who blatantly, absolutely disrespected me like that and broke my heart into a million pieces, I could never look at them the same. I know many people that have been through a relationship or been in a relationship where someone's cheated, and every situation is different because not everyone has the same outlook on it, and some people have, you know, forged really, really, really strong relationships after cheating, and there are so many different reasons that someone cheats and all this kind of stuff. But I don't know, just me, you're asking me this question, and that's just my honest response. I couldn't move on from that, because that's just like such a soul destroying thing to do to someone. And if you can do that, then you can do anything to me. So yeah, no thanks. I'm going to end on this really, really cute question. It says, it's not really life related, but really interested in your future plans for your plants. Do you plan on having more plants? I just love this. This is what you'd normally ask someone if they have kids. But that's where I'm at in my life. Plants are my kids. Do you plan on having more plants? If so, which ones are on your wish list? What does Reese think about your love for plants? Lots of love from Belgium. Belgium. The next part of her question says, what are your future plans for your house? Are you staying where you live now? Do you want to buy a house somewhere else? If so, like a house more outside the city with more garden or more in the city? To answer the first part of your question, future plans for my plants. I have a few more on my wish list that I would very much like to get my hands on. But once I've found those, I am going to hopefully stop there. I just have a few rare ones that I want. I'd rather have like a smaller collection of rare plants and a big collection of common plants. So that's my plans for my plants. And which ones are on my wish list? Wish list. Let me open my notes because I do actually have this written down. This is my life, everyone. Okay. Philodendron varicosum. Philodendron melanochrysum. Philodendron plomani, Philodendron varicosum / melanochrysum. I'm probably stuffing up these pronunciations, by the way. I'd also love, which other one did I want? A Florida beauty and a Florida ghost would be lovely. But yeah, that's pretty much the top of my wish list, if not the only plants that are really on my wish list. The next question, what are your future plans for your house? I don't really have any. Are you staying where you live now? Yes. Do you want to buy a house somewhere else? I would love to. My ultimate goal, Reese and I's ultimate goal, is a house on the beach. That's like my big life goal, one of many. And if so, like more outside the city with more of a garden, I would love a house with land, because right now we do not have much land, if any at all, pretty much. So I would love a big block. That's my goal. A house on the beach with a lot of land, which is very expensive, but hopefully one day I'll be able to achieve that. I just realized that I missed out on what does Reese think about your love for plants. It is a journey. One day he'll be helping me like make plant totems and climbing poles. The next day he'll be like, nah, there is too many plants in here. So he's very patient with me. He's amazing like that. Very, 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 very patient. And yeah, some days he hates them. Some days, more often than not, he doesn't care and he's fine. But some days they do frustrate him if he's in a bad mood already and he's like trips on a plant or something. More often than not, he's really supportive and he'll help me out like buying new shelves or yeah, making totems or things like that. He's amazing and I love that about him. Fueling my obsessions. Anyway, that is the end of the episode. I was going to say video. I hope you guys enjoyed. Thank you so much for sending your questions through. I really, really appreciate you, like, yeah, just being vulnerable and sharing something that might be hard to talk about or whatever. I hope some people got some clarity out of these answers, or it can help anyone or whatever. I do these things because I know that a lot of people are probably thinking the same thing or have the same issues in their lives, and sometimes they don't have people who they can ask for advice, or they just would like to hear it from a different perspective or someone else's opinion who's not like actually in the situation. So yes, if you do enjoy these episodes, please let me know. You can also leave a rating and review. I hate asking this of you. I hate plugging myself, but I do it because it helps to grow this channel. Not channel, podcast. Keep on getting confused with YouTube and my podcasts. Anyway, you can also subscribe on the Apple Podcasts app and Spotify, I believe. Thank you all so much for listening. I sincerely appreciate it. I hope you have an amazing day, and I'll speak to you all next time. Bye, everyone.